to the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. On this week's episode, we have part two of Jan Brinks' presentation from the Succeed USDF FEI Level Trainers Conference that was held in Elk Grove, California in 2007. First, we hear how Jan began his riding career.
I'm not a horse person from the beginning at all. I played ice hockey, like a lot of guys in Sweden. It's a big sport in Sweden, and my parents had nothing to do with horses at all. They divorced when I was 7. Yeah, you know how that is. It's not that fun. And no money, nothing. And I played ice hockey up to the junior national team. But in fact, I start riding because of the girls in the riding school. And yeah, we went down there because the girls was there. They were always there, the whole day and night, you know. And they got us up on a horse, and I was one of the last one to go, the guys there playing ice hockey. And I looked at them, and they really like, and the girls were laughing and everything. And I was a little bit taller than the other ones. So it went a little bit better for me. And the girls was really impressed and everything. And then I was thinking, oh, Jesus Christ, I have to start in the riding school. So I did that. And that was really the reason. I have nothing, no interest in horses at all. And after a while, some months, I could feel that the atmosphere in the stable and the feeling with the horses, the animals, I really liked it. And then I went totally fanatic, you know, borrowing all the books about horses, and I really went super interest for horses. But I played ice hockey in the same time. And when I was like 16, I have to choose, because we started to go, you know, to Canada to play and everywhere. And I went away too long from the horses, my feeling. So I could feel that I can never do both anyway. Good. So then I think I choose with my heart. And that I since that day, I didn't play one game. I do it only for fun now sometimes, but I choose the horses and tried to go to the equestrian school in the national stud in Flyinge, and I did. I came in, and after 1 year, I went. They asked me to be employed there, so I worked 3 years at the national stud. Learned a lot about breeding and young horses, and it was a good time for me that time. Then when I came up to age of 20, I think. In the time I was working in Flyinge, I was also starting to ride after work until 11 o'clock in the evening. So I started to rent a stable and ride horses for breeders and start to sell horses. So I already, in that time, I could feel that to come somewhere you have to do something. You have to, if you don't have money, you have to do something. And I think that's what I'm going to talk a lot about today. We're going to talk about the horse and treating the horse, how we treat the horse, the sport, modern sport horse today, maintaining the modern sport horse today. But I'm also going to go one more step further, talk about us, the rider, because we are forgetting us very much, how we are doing the things. Anyway, when I went to the 20s, a person contacted me and asked, why can't we do something together? I bought a small farm, which is only an old cow farm. It's no value at all, but there's some land, 40 acres. Can't we do anything together and buy horses together? And you already do it a little bit. And I said, yes. I mean, 3 years on the national stud is super for me, but I want to go continue, you know. So we start two-stop dressage stable together, Mr. Albinson and me, 1981. And it was very, very small. And that's the brochures you have there, that's the place today. In the meantime, we did that together for 7 years, building it up step by step. But then I bought him out, and since for 15 years, 16 years, I'm full owner of the place, and I run into place myself since that time. And when you see it, you have to know that it didn't start big. It starts very, very small, step by step, without any money. The whole farm cost about $25,000 to buy. That was the way it was. In the meantime, the first 5-6 years, I also went to the professional school for riders in Warndorf in Germany. And I was maybe working in Germany for totally 4 years. In Tedorescu's place, Mr. Tedorescu, but also a lot with Herbert Rehbein in Hamburg. It was important time for me because it's a lot of network. I learned to know a lot of people there. I learned to speak German and some kind of English.
Jan also addressed the qualities of a successful rider.
You have to have so many qualities to be on the top level. I'm talking about the top level now. But I know that to deal with horses, to have the horses as an interest, is not only the top level. You can have so much fun on the amateur level, but you have to ask yourself, what do I want? If somebody asks me, I want to be number one in the Olympics, then you have to act like this now. But you can also say, okay, I want to try to act a little bit in this direction, but I don't want to go to the Olympics. I don't want to try to go to the US national team because I have a family, I have that, and I have that, you know. Good. Then you feel safe. Then you have your goal, you know. So this is very direction of really top performance. Huh? So what does it take to get to the top? What qualities? What kind of personality? Long legs, maybe? Money? Yeah, we have to see. I take step by step here. First, technical. Of course, you have to have a technical knowledge. I mean, before that, you cannot do anything. Coordination. You know, we have a lot of aids. The weight, our hands, the legs. They have to coordinate sometimes. Sometimes you have to bend with your left hand and use your right leg. And then think about where the weight is, here or there. So you have to coordinate that a little bit. And that takes a little bit of time. You have to have the timing in your riding. The timing you can have, for example, when you do the aids for a change, flying change. You see a lot of riders, they're a little bit out of timing. If you get a bad change, most of the time you're too quick or you're too late with your timing, with the aids. So timing is really important. Gain experience, I mean, that's what we all do. We ride, and try, and train, and train, and train. You have to do that. You have to really have, you can read in the book, you have to have a technical knowledge. I think it's really important to do these things, theoretical. These lectures and clinics and read books, look at DVDs, is super. But everyone can do that. I mean, everyone can be quite good, theoretical. But then you have to feel it. You have to do it. And you have to do it more than one time. It takes time. I'm still learning. Kira, she is much older than me. She's also still learning. So this is the way it is. You learn your whole life in these things. And then we have these physical things. Long or short. Some people say, you have to be really easy for you to ride because you have such a long legs. I said that to someone today. I don't know if it's Elizabeth, I think. Yeah. It's not true. It's a lot of problem when you have a long leg as well. Maybe it can look good sometimes, but a lot of time, especially with the modern horses today with quite long legs, they can be tall, but not so much body. The legs are hanging quite down. Eh? And when we have to use our aids, our legs, in a smooth way, we always have to move the seat a little bit. Otherwise, we cannot come to the horse. But sometimes I'm jealous of these people with perfect size of the leg, you know, the legs is always there in the right position and can just move very smooth. So if you're long or short, how you're looking like has nothing to do with successive riding. You can be short, you can be long, but the rest of the things is really important. Of course, if you're very short leg, it's more difficult with the balance. You have to work more with that in the extended trot. When you have long legs, you can sit easier. But again, it's also a problem with long legs. Condition. Yeah, I think so. Depends on your level. I mean, it's never bad to have a good condition. Why? Because if you have a good condition to sit on a horse, not getting tired too quick, then you also have more time to think about coordination and timing. So So that's maybe, you're not getting a better rider to run 3 kilometers really fast. Of course not. But it's good to think about these things, you know. And I have to say that to get the body control better, because if you have good condition, you have better control over your body. And we are working with that quite much in the Swedish Olympic Committee now. We have to, all the riders have to do some kind of athletic program with our bodies. It's more like stretching, because we are getting quite stiff as a rider. We're sitting here, and when we do these things with the other athletes to try to get these hands down here with this leg, the riders are like, and the others, they are doing this, you know. And we have to do like this. So it's good to stretch. I'm very bad on it, but I have to start with it, and it's working. They're doing a lot of programs with weights here, with a body control without the horse. The weights here, and then go down like this, and stay straight like this, and then you can put on more weights. And this is really good, to have the control over the body. So you can find movements and exercises really good. Of course you have to have feeling and talent. I don't know if it's right to have under physical, maybe it was under the first one, but feeling and talent. A lot of people have a lot of feeling and a lot of talent, but they are not good in the whole picture, and they are not going to be a winner anyway. It's not bad to have a little bit talent, but you don't need to be extremely talented from the beginning, because later on I'm going to tell you what the most important thing is. Athlete and condition I was already talking about. The health. Yeah, I think so. I'm working with my employers and my stable a lot with the food, how to eat in the right way. I think it's good to feel well. If you feel well, you perform better. Then you have again to think about what kind of level. If you want to be the best in the world, you have to think a lot about all these things. Very, very much. If you are on another level and another goal, it's good to think about it, I think. You don't need to go like be crazy on it, but it's not bad to think about it. Now we're starting to come to the really important things, the physiological things here inside the brain. This is where, you know, golfers and riders is very much the same. Doesn't matter how talented you are, because if you start to think wrong, also Tiger Woods is throwing the ball out in the forest. Huh? It's really a lot of things. To deal with success and disappointments is not easy when you're starting to have success, or when you're starting to have a lot of disappointments with a difficult horse. But you have to learn to deal with it. You have to find oneself, one's own way of focusing. I mean, when you're competing, the last hour before you compete, I don't know one person who do exactly the same. We all have to find how you're feeling comfortable before. Some people, they want to talk with other people, otherwise they get nervous. Me, myself, I have to be alone 1 hour before. I have to sit, and it must be quiet. I have to have all my plan in the morning done. I hate to come in stress and feel that I don't have control over my boots, my trousers, my things. It's really important for me. And I have to have my time to think about the test, the riding, and everything. My ex-girlfriend Minna, she was the opposite. She wanted to have Madonna on really high in the truck and almost dancing around, you know. Otherwise, she getting very nervous if it was quiet. So we have to find our own way to focus on what we are doing. Most of the time, I think people want to go to the side a little bit to concentrate most of the time. But then you can do it different ways. Also learn not to think the wrong way. For example, these ghost things, like, oh, I saw this and these people was there. What happened if the sponsors now, if it's going bad, what was the order? Then maybe I don't have any sponsor anymore. This kind of thinking, then it's really going to be a bad ride. You have to just think about yourself and don't care about if there is 10 persons there or 60,000 looking. And I think the mentor is very important here for the riders. And I'm coming back to that later on, the trainer's role. This is the most important thing to success. This is the most important thing in life. Doesn't matter what you're doing. If you're building up a company, a relationship, marriage, athlete things, sport, it's the drive, the mental attitude, the will to burn for something, you know. to go to the goal. Hard work. Don't be afraid to hard work. Humbleness. I mean, I used to say, as more success you have, as a lower profile you should have. You don't need to say that you are good. Everybody know. And you have to treat your colleagues in a nice way, or the people around you in the stable. Stubbornness, yes. Because sometimes you really have to think, not giving up. I'm going again. And humbleness is the same, horsemanship to the horse. Don't start to argue with the horse or thinking, oh, now he must have a rest. Typical, now is the most important competition. And then compete anyway, even if the horse is not feeling happy. You have to really have horsemanship when you're working here. Without this, number four here, you can never be the top rider of the world. Never. And you can, if you do this really, really good, you can come really far without that much talent. You have to have a little bit talent, but if you do this good, you can come very far by training yourself up. Then there is some more qualities and characteristics. I think it's really, really important to be successful, to the ability to cooperate with people. Lonely is not strong all the time. And that could be like, if you start to have success, you always have to deal with sponsors. It's very important. Horse owners, your trainer, your mentor, the media. Media is really, really good if you have them on your side. But they are not very nice to deal with if you have it on the wrong side, or if you're treating them in the wrong way. And then you have partners in life. Yeah, that could be a wife, a husband, parents if you're younger, children. Why? Because equestrian sport is not a normal sport that you do inside and then you go home and then you do something else. Equestrian sport is a lifestyle. It's a way of living. Yeah? And if you have a wife or a husband that don't understand anything about this, why you're putting so many hours on the horses, I think you can forget it. Then it's not going to work. So you really have to respect your second part in life, or your husband, your parents, or the children. And you have to deal with all these things. And you have to ask yourself, can I get to this goal and still have my family in one piece? Or these things, I think, is really important to take and give. I have one really interesting history about one horse owner. For Emma Carlson, one of our new riders in Sweden. She's young, 21 or something like that. And she have a florist on mare. Then she started to train the owner of the mare. And then the owner of the mare said, okay, I see you ride horse so well. You can take some competition sometimes, but I'm going to ride also. Okay, and she did it, and she did it. Now the horse is in Grand Prix. She's now able to keep the mare for Grand Prix, for the national team. She was competing in Aachen this year, but the owner still want to be there. The owner still want to ride a little bit. And she's dealing very well with this. This is not normal for a Grand Prix level horse, but she have to deal with it. Otherwise she couldn't have the horse. My owner from Briar, I'm very happy that she did. He didn't sell Briar when people offered him $4 million for a horse when he was 10. He said, okay, I have to think about it one night. That was about 40 million crowns in that time, because the dollar was very high in that time. And then the day after he said, yeah, I have one wife, two kids. My farm is paid. I asked myself yesterday evening, do I want to change very much in my life if I'm happy? And I'm okay, I'm happy with my wife and my life. I keep the horse. And that's quite tough to do that. And I'm very happy that I have a good relationship with him. Otherwise, I couldn't have the horse. So you have, as a rider, to deal with a lot of things. You cannot just be nose up and think, I'm the best, you know, I do whatever I want. Because then you're not going to have success. Money. We were talking about money before. Do we need money? Yes and no. I mean, you're not getting successful because you have a lot of money. If you don't have any money, you can be successful anyway. I know. Because I didn't have any money from the beginning. What I have to do is that I have to learn my profession first, and then I could keep some horses later on. I have to build up my economy myself, and you have to build up the environment to make your goal going in, to make your training. Nobody's doing it for you. You have to really go for it yourself. And that could be, for example, for me it was, and for I think a lot of others here, Stefan Peters, my friend, and some others, professionals, I think also here in this room, we have to train other horses, train other people to get some money, to finance your own competing. For me, it was that I really learned to get an eye for young horses before anyone else could see it was a good horse. So I could buy them early or get them in training early. How could I do that? Yeah, because of looking at a lot of young horses, to have interest, to have a common interest in sport and breeding, not only the sport. I think it's really important. Really genuine horse knowledge is really important. I know young riders that I met in Germany and Sweden, they really have rich parents and they only like to perform, to compete. When I ask them in a clinic, what's your horse? What breeding? They didn't know the father of the horse. And then I was asking myself, that's her interest in this sport. Only the competing thing. And she's never going to be good enough later on. Because you have to have this, the whole picture, you know. You have to have an interest in property, yes. Maybe you have to deal with that. To run a place. To build something up, like I did. And many people doing in Europe. I could never be where I am if I didn't train myself and learn myself how to run a property. And running the tractor with the, to make the surfaces good and all these things, you know. This is really, really, for some people, one way. And I'm not telling you that if you have the money, of course you cannot throw them away and then try to go without money. You can you can also be really good to buy good horses and to buy good trainers and everything. But it's not necessary. You can't do it without it. And now in the end, the trainer's role. I think in Sweden now, it's getting more and more, you know, the old way of training. You take the trail of the horse, you go to the trainer, you train 1 hour, and bye-bye, you go home again. That's okay, better than nothing. But it's not okay, and it's not enough if you want to really come up to the top. Because the trainer have to be like a mentor. It's not necessary only the mentor for you as a rider, but the trainer have to influence the rider to the right feeling, the right way to treat the horse. There's so much around it, you know, not only this 1 hour training. In the training, I think it's so important that the trainer strengthen the self-confidence on the rider, not the opposite. I see a lot of trainers. They give about 500 instructions in 1 minute. And you can see on the rider that the rider is taking in two things. Because the rider is so concentrated on the riding that they cannot take in all this information. And the information is like blah, 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 blah all the time. So it's like some background music, elevator music, you know? And you're not taking it in. And also the worst thing is when the trainer, you have a problem, really a problem, and you're frustrated, and the trainer says, uh-oh. Give me the horse. Sitting up. Doing it really easy because you're professional. And so, see, it was easy. Try to feel and pick the right moment when you ask the rider that I ride the horse a little bit now. For example, you know the problem, but you can maybe say, I start to ride, and then you feel it after me. Then it's not, the rider's not losing the self-confidence. Because you say, it's not because you're riding bad, it's because I want to show you something. And then I'm going to let you feel it. So this, I think, is really, really important. Feedback after work, the book. A lot of people ask, what is the book? The book is my thing. I always use the last 10 years. I have a book, a blue book. I write down all my feelings when I have something special feeling in the training. Something that, aha, now I find out how to do the one tempi vibrio really straight. I was having a little bit more right banded. These small things to make a progress can be 1 point in the competition. But if you ride 10 horses a day like I do, it's very important after 2 weeks to forget this small thing. And then when you have the problem again, I go back in my book. What was it? Aha! I forgot. A little bit bending the whole diagonal. So I write up everything, all these things. For example, when I have a super competition and winning, what I go back, right? What did I do in the warming up? How was I thinking when I was sitting in the truck 1 hour before? What was the way? What did I think about? How did I warm up? And then I have some. Then when you have another competition, okay, the training was not good. Now I have the Grand Prix tomorrow. Okay, I go back. Aachen 2005. Aha, these things. This book is so important for me. If I forget the book, I don't know. Maybe I cannot compete. I don't know. Sometimes I feel really safe with it, you know, because it's so easy to forget small things. I write up special exercise I do with Kira if I feel it's really good, and I write special horses, that and that. So the book is really, really important. I used to tell my people training for me that don't forget, now you write this up, because it was the best changes you ever did. Write up what you did, what you were thinking about before and after, and feedback after competition, video. These things takes time. I know myself sometimes. I go from a competition, we have done the video, and I'm so stressed as soon as I'm home again with new projects, new horses. So many times I never looked at the video later on, only quick ones after the competition, but I never didn't really take my time at home to sit and realize what happened, bad or good. And I think when I start to do that, when you could sit at home very, very comfortable and calm and to really see what's happening, then you get really a super feedback how to continue. So I try to force my students to have someone to film them, you know. And my 70-year-old Sara Henrietta, which is really successful this year, international, she said, I said, why are you not filming your parents? Because I hate when they film me, okay? And Sara, she really wants to be the top of the world. I said, what are you going to do in the Olympics? Because there's about 4 million people looking at you in the TV cameras. And it's good to get used to it now. Okay. But I hate it. Yeah, but we have to do it. So I forced them to start the film. And I said, don't think about, because you're thinking about the camera, then you're not focused enough on what you're doing. So now it's fine. And now she said, this is really good. I can look at my cure just before I go, and I have my cure in my mind, and I always look at the good cure, not at the bad one. So this is something really important. And then to sit with your riders, to put up goals. Long-term and short-term goals. And these things also take some time, you know. And trainer said, how can I have time to sit with all my students like this? Yeah, but then you have to calculate that with your students. If they really want to have this kind of super good mentor and trainer, maybe they have to pay for it. They have to pay another hour to get the whole thing together, you know. I think this is really important.
This podcast is available for download on iTunes. Visit eTrack, the USDF's online learning center and resource for dressage and equine education, to watch videos from this and other USDF events at usdf.org. The USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.